listening to the Sportageous Podcast, where sport gets smarter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sportageous Podcast. On today's special podcast, we have Slovenian pro climber Mina Markovic, a three-time lead World Cup winner and European champ who's also completed two 9A routes. Welcome to the show, Mina. Let's start things off then with a little bit about, I guess, your journey and how you got into climbing. So you growing up and a little bit of that story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually grew up in a really small town in Slovenia, and climbing there was totally not developed yet. So when I was like a child up to 10 years old, I tried a lot of different sports, what was available in my city. So I tried, I don't know, athletic, ballet, tennis, gymnastic, like a few different things. But I didn't actually stick to no one. Maybe like for half a year, and then I get pretty bored. And one day I was just crossing during the park, and it was like a sport week in our city. And they build up a small promotional climbing wall. It was like 6 meters and 8 meters high with the free routes. So with the other kids, we stopped there and tried to climbing, and I immediately liked it. But the problem was that actually there was no really climbing club at this time and in our small city, or even the climbing wall. This was the first one. So I just introduced it and I really fall into it. And then during the mountaineering association, it was all together. One guy said that they will try to move it to the one primary school. And if there will be enough interest, we can start climbing. But it lasts like another 9 months that everything happened, and then it happened, started to happen really, really slowly. But there were also some other guys who bring climbing from the capital city to our small city when I grew up, and they started to teach us and to build a small boulder wall and bring some holds and things like this. So then it started easily.
Right. And before we sort of delve into that further, tell me a little bit about what you get up to outside of climbing. So what do you do, you know, when you're not climbing, when you're not on the wall, basically, when you're not training, when you're not practicing, what do you, like, who are you, basically?
Love nature, so I really like to going outside. So everything what is connected to be outside on the fresh air in the nature, connected to even animals, if you're following, I really fall into some animals recently. Yeah. And just to be on the fresh air and to feel this vibe of outdoors, it's amazing to me. So I can go out there even just on a short walk or stretching, or just to sit there and listen a book, read a book or listen to something. So I don't need really big excuse to go outside. From the other stuff that I also like to do is I'm currently finishing the biopsychology and things like to read the different subjects, researches, also topics about trainings and psychological aspects, physiological, everything connected to this.
Right. So it's almost like you've taken what you've learned while on the wall and then started looking into it in a lot more critically and more in depth to understand it better?
Yeah, something like this.
Right. And let's shift to the climbing. Of course, now, you know, lead has always been your thing, where you've won so many World Cups and you've won the combined versions as well. Why lead? How did you get so good at lead? Why did you think lead was the way to go?
I actually grew up with elite climbing, so that's one of the main reasons. Because when I started to climb, we actually didn't know the boulders. Already for the first few years, we didn't know the boulders. We just climbed the shorter routes, longer routes. Mainly, they were kind of similar style, the routes, the old school, because there was not enough knowledge. But I started with the lead, and lead was always declimbing for me. So that's the main reason. Also, when I started competitions, there were no boulder competition there yet. There were only lead ones. I'm talking about the youth ones, or maybe it was one boulder, but not really. It was like the just a shorter route. So that's the main reason.
Right. And tell me a little bit about that experience of having actually, you know, won three combined World Cups. You're, I believe, one of only three women to have ever achieved that in climbing. What has that been like? And, you know, what was the experience like, essentially?
Honestly, like, maybe I'm not relying too much on my result that I achieved already. Because, I don't know, that's the way I am. I just, I don't know, it is like this, but at the moment when I competed, I really did it passionately. And it was also a really long period, like for 6 years that I was, and me and Janine, we were always just switching for the first and second place. And this is even maybe the bigger achievement to me, to be so long at the totally top, like for the 6 years. But yeah, it was always something driving me. Like I loved climbing and I loved climbing, and I just train and going on a comps and focus and try to crush it. So maybe with the years, when the time passed, you start to evaluate it even more.
Sure. And is there then like one moment where you'd say, hey, this was by far the highlight of my career? Or were there several aspects? So such as you touched on, for example, being the fact that, you know, it was that journey of having been at the top for such a long period of time. Or was there one moment where you went, hey, this, you know, this is actually the highlight of my career?
I think no. I think like the all this period, and also counting how it developed, that I like progressed really statically. I wasn't like a wonder kid just to bump in. But I needed to work for my results, and they were coming like on the top. Every year it went a little bit up. So actually this, that being long period at that level without injuries and things like this, that missed me a lot. Because I think we can see now years a lot of like short-term stars that they just bump out, or they are maybe able to handle half a season, one season. But then they get injured or their motivations skip around. But I think like to keep so long on a good level without injuries, it's something that I really value.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can't, you know, I just go to the local bouldering wall and I'm getting injured all the time. So I can't imagine being able to do that at such a consistent level for such a long period of time. So it's absolutely incredible. But I did want to ask you, tell me a little bit about Slovenian climbing and how much it has changed since when you started. Because nowadays, you know, Slovenia is considered one of the top climbing nations in professional competitions. So how much has that changed from when you kicked things off and started competing professionally?
Yeah, it does change, but it actually didn't change by the other way. Especially the mentality that, especially with the girls, we see that the others train and then we train. Like, it's always in the history of Slovenia that it was one girl that showed the others that it's totally possible to be the top of the World Cups, and then there will come the other to follow. So this mentality is definitely going further. So you see, if neighbor can do, I can do. And it is also that with those, we are often training together, or even if not, there are like few strong clubs in Slovenia that where, you know, the things are happening. So basically the main training is still going on kind of like spray walls, just that they extended and get pretty bigger, or they're placed in a bigger climbing center that we didn't have before. But the advantage of the bigger climbing centers are not just that the climbing get like more developed, more well known and things like this, but also you have definitely more possibilities. Maybe most of the training we still do on a spray walls like we did, but those spray walls are definitely bigger. The whole selection is better. There is more place, and you have also possibilities like to do, I don't know, other stuff, campus board or coordination boulders or things like this that you didn't have the opportunity to do before.
Sure. And how much of that sort of influences Slovenian climbing and makes it so very good? Because obviously a lot of people talk about Japanese climbing and how they have, you know, gyms all over Japan. You go to Tokyo and it probably has like 10 times the number of gyms that Australia as a whole has, you know?
Yes.
So what is it about the training and the facilities that enables Slovenian climbing to be successful and Slovenian climbers to be successful so consistently and over such a long period of time?
I think more than like the facilities and infrastructure is knowledge and dedication to hard work. I think like this, that the main facility is this knowledge of hard working that is going from generation to generation. We all know like that you need to work hard for the good results, and maybe the standard, what means to work normal, is a bit higher in our country. I don't know.
Sure. That's a really interesting insight. Tell me about who you see as some of the sort of really strong up and coming climbers at the moment. So you know how you touched on earlier that some of the climbers, they come for half a season, they get injured, so short term stars. But who are some of the climbers who you rate both on in the women's side and the men's side, who you go, yeah, this is, you know, they're going to be around for a long time?
Oh, that's a really tricky question to answer, but I don't know. I definitely really strongly believe in Slovenian girls. And even if you check the youth team, I can see a few girls coming up and they have really good and bright future. So I believe that the generation of the Slovenian girls with Janja, Mija, Vita, Lučka, all those, they will go a long way.
Sure. Very diplomatic answer. So I like that.
Yeah. No, but it's true.
Absolutely.
And yeah, sure. I know the national aspect and field more than the world.
Yeah.
Definitely, I also know the world one, but maybe we can check in 2 years later.
Yeah. Absolutely. We would love to have you back for a chat in a couple of years. Let's talk a little bit about the Olympics. So obviously the Olympics have been postponed, but they're still going on as, you know, Tokyo 2020. When everything was being decided, I've heard every side of the story. You know, someone says they love it, and I'm sure you have as well. Someone loves it, someone hates it, someone thinks, you know, it's a good way for it to move forward. Someone goes, oh, I don't know, look, as long as the sport is now there, it can build from there. Where do you sit? Which side of the fence do you sit at? And what are your views of the Olympic format for sport climbing?
Yeah, my view is like this, that if the climbing wanted to come to the Olympics, we needed to take some considerations. So I think it was definitely impossible to pick just one discipline and put it to the Olympics, because competitions are obviously going on in three disciplines. I don't, by my point of view, yeah, they are much different and maybe not totally equal, but on the other point, it wouldn't be fair to just pick one, because also the all attention in the World Cup and everything like this would then move to the one part, and it would be impossible to pick up the one. So regarding to the situation, if you have to choose climbing on Olympics or not, it was, for my opinion, quite maybe the only possible solution to do. There is another question, maybe just about the format, how to score it, or how to rate which disciplines further or later on the shuttle, or how they are like pointed. But yeah, my point is that it wasn't the dramatically wrong decision. So what it brings to climbing is definitely you needed to come more all around there. And at the beginning, maybe it was like seen that speed is something totally out of the space. But now it's actually showing that someone who is better overaller, or who is, a lot of people who are really good in fast learning or also in the bouldering and can adapt to the lead, they can do really good in the speed also quite soon. So I think it is reflecting one aspect of the athlete.
Sure. That's a really sort of interesting perspective, but I did want to sort of tread on it a bit further by asking you, as you know, one of the athletes who's competed in all three formats and regularly, all three mm-hmm. disciplines, do you think that any certain type of expertise is disadvantaged? So do you think that speed climbers have a disadvantage in this format or the three disciplines together?
Yeah, I think the speed climbers has the biggest thing to do if they want to be concurrent, because they put so much time, so much effort in their really peak sport performance, the speed performance, that I think it's a bit harder for them to catch the lead and bouldering performance of the other two disciplines.
Sure. And let's talk a little bit about women in sports and women in climbing. You know, in a lot of sports, the discussion nowadays is women aren't getting the same kind of pay as their male counterparts. So if you look at things like football or soccer, so the Australian, for example, the Australian women's football team now gets paid the same as the men. This just happened at the start of this year. So about mm-hmm. time, right?
Yeah.
So what is it like in climbing? How is the pay, sponsorships? Do you think that women still have some ceilings to break, or is it quite balanced?
No, I think by my aspect in climbing, it is already quite balanced, because maybe the men like break the ice in the climbing, but I think for many years we are having like really good performances either on the woman and the man sides. Okay, men still have the highest grades, but also the woman can perform enormously good. So I think with this aspect, there is not such a big difference in climbing, from my point of view. We are not like, I don't know, ski jumps or soccer or something like this, that were traditionally the man, more a man's sport. So no, I think the situation like in this is good, and the women in a sport climbing, that we are valued.
Right. And do you think that has to do with the fact that climbing has just grown in that manner where, you know, it's always sort of been very community-based, everyone is helping each other out, working together to solve complex problems on whichever route that they're doing? Do you think that has influenced the way that climbing has sort of molded into a proper sport?
I think, yeah, I think that it's a big aspect, and I really like this nature of climbing, how we developed it with all this community, all this sharing and helping, and I just hope that too much professional sport orientation won't kill this spirit, but I believe outdoors it will stay forever. That's my prediction, I hope.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Okay, now I just want to ask you a few fun sort of quick short questions. Just like random things, climbing and not climbing. So do you have any story from all the travels that you did while competing that's really interesting or really exciting that many people may not know about? It doesn't have to be on the wall. It could be off the wall. Just something maybe with your teammates or an experience in one of the cities or the countries you went to, which is stuck in your head and, you know, you just sort of go, oh, I always think back to that.
Oh, I believe there are many, many things like yeah. this, because as you know, I competed and traveled a lot of the world yeah. around, but yeah, there are definitely good memories spent with the team, especially once with Maya Widmar and Natalia Gross. We stayed in Malaysia alone, three girls, and the competition was held like 1 hour from the Kuala Lumpur on some hill, and there were like five hotels on that hill, like really, really big ones, and we stay. Only thing you can do was like to stay in a hotel, but there was actually literally everything in this hotel, from cinema, climbing malls, I don't know, casino, also the climbing wall, everything. So yeah, we were stuck there for 1 week because the competition was held in one of these hotels at the seventh floor. So it was interesting experience, because you can see thousands of people coming there to the vacation. So we were like there, we felt like we are stuck here, what we can do. So that was the funny one. And by the other experiences, I don't know, traveling all around the world, see different countries, spend time with the local communities, it's unbelievable, and I'm just looking forward to go more.
Sure. What is one of the or some of the cities that have a special place that you really enjoy going to in all your travels, if there are any?
I really like China a lot, so would like to go for outdoor climbing there also. But in Jordan, in Amman, it was the special city. It was also a World Cup once held there, and then later we come back to the outdoor climbing, and it was a great experience. I don't know, I also like Boulder, Colorado, Spain all around, and home is also nice, but maybe too long for right now.
Sure. And what are your favorite kind of, what sort of holes do you enjoy the most, and which do you perhaps not enjoy?
If we go like to the rocks, the limestone is my favorite, like the a bit too fast and a bit crimpy style, like old school, if you call it like this. And I'm really not the best friend with the big slopers or the pockets. Maybe the pockets are even the greater enemy than the slopers. They are like at the end of the list.
Sure. And so to frame that properly, traditional climbing versus obviously competitive indoor climbing. Tell me a little bit about the two, how they compare. And I think almost always climbers prefer the outdoors. And you've already told me that, you know, you love nature and all of that. But tell me a little bit about the differences between the two and how they complement each other.
Well, if I go back, like in the days that I started elite climbing, there were a lot, the routes were much different, and the time limit was like 12 minutes. Or actually in the final, the organizer can pick up the time up to the 14 minutes per route. So we actually had competitions that the final route, each competitor climbed like 12 or 14 minutes. And with the years, when they switched to 10 or even 8, it was like, what, 8 minutes? What we can do? It's like not enough. So, we all know that it's now up to the 6 minutes on the competition, and it's much more intensive than it was. It's also more intensive to the rock, because if you go like route 30-40 meters, you will never finish it in the 6 minutes. We all know this. You will maybe finish shorter one. So definitely competition climb or the lead climbing is now become much more intense, and also combine much more bouldering movements, because it needs to be not only the power factor, but they also combine it with the risk and coordination factor, so it's easier to separate the people a little bit. Because on a competition, it can happen now to you that you can come to the one point actually pretty fresh physically, but there will be some skill or something that you need to decide mentally that you will go for and risk, and maybe you don't decide and you don't go further by the route. And on a rock is a different aspect. You can go to the route, you can try it, and usually they are not such a kind of movement.
Sure. And so, you know, everyone's talking about, obviously, Free Solo and Alex Honnold and what he was, you know, what he was able to do, and the fact that Jimmy Chin and the likes were recording him while he, completed El Capitan at Yosemite. Tell us, do you watch climbing documentaries? Do you have any favorite ones that you would like to recommend, or even any books?
I watch them, but I'm not like totally climbing movie person, because I rather go climbing myself. So that's the main reason. I watch them, but if I have a chance that go outside and experience climbing through my own eyes, I rather do this. But doesn't mean that I don't totally follow and appreciate all the climbing that is done around the world, and like admire the persons who are pushing the limits further. So actually, to do some recommendations, I don't have so many, because I'm also not a person who will spend all the days in the front of TV series or something like this.
Sure. And I think that's a perfect segue into my next question. What are you getting up to during, this very strange time that we're all in? How are you keeping fit? How are you working out? How are you climbing? What do you get up to at home?
Yeah, I actually live in the, I don't know if you can actually call it city, but it's like 5,000 habitats. So I have this luck that there is not shops and stores, but there is also plenty of nature just that I stand out of the place I live. So I'm still doing university, as you could hear. So in the mornings, usually 4, 5, 6 hours, I spend in the front of the computer and doing stuff like this. But then around noon, I just need to go outside. So I go outside on a walk. Maybe I found some animals here near, and I go on a walk and visit them. So the goats are really nice. And sure, then later afternoon, I work out something, or maybe with weights, maybe body weight training or hangboarding. But usually it is like, I don't know, I keep it short, like 1.5 hours, something like this, but just to feel better. And yeah, if it's possible, I'm just like to be out on the fresh air, even to go, if the weather is good, I go to do weights on my balcony, it's better. So nothing special. And then I call some person, spend too much time on Instagram, and I admit, and that's pretty much it.
Sure. And my next question was more, I guess, around what would you say to young women who want to climb and want to get into the sport? Do you have any advice for them from your own personal experiences? And what would you say, and what do you say to younger athletes and younger women getting into the sport?
I really recommend them this sport because just go. It's really nice sport. It offers you to develop like physically, equally physically, coordination, and also your personality, because the climbing has also the big aspect of socialization. And also you can know yourself a lot good during the climbing. Like during the climbing, you can find some aspects or you can meet some aspects of yourself that maybe you couldn't do in overall life or with other sports. So this is the really nice way that climbing is offering, that you can growing overall. And also not just physically, but when you go to travel or when you go climbing outdoors or set your climbing trip, you're also getting these experiences, and you can put everything together. You have the sport, you have social things, you have traveling things, organizations, so you can experience really a lot with during the sport that if you fall in love, it's really beautiful one for my belief, and offering you so much diversity. So I think that they shouldn't be afraid and just go into the climbing. Yeah.
Sure. And that's a really interesting point that you raise, because could you shed some light on, because, you know, a lot of climbing as a sport has grown so much, but a lot of people still don't necessarily know what it is in a lot of the parts of the world. They may have an understanding, but having not tried it, they don't necessarily know how important it is, how mentally challenging the sport is alongside being physically challenging. And could you tell me a little bit about those aspects of climbing, so the problem-solving element and so on?
It's really complex. Like even before, you know, when I mentioned the competition situations, that you can be physically strong enough to do something, or it can also happen on a rock or on a training in the gym, that you're physically strong enough, but you're not strong enough in your mind that you will dare to go to this jump, or believe that when you will come with some kind of speed to this crimp or something, that you will catch it. And there are definitely the mental barriers that you need to break. And they can learn you a lot that if you start to trust to yourself in these certain situations, maybe you can transfer this to the other aspects of life. Maybe you're working the same in your work or with the friends, that you have abilities to do something, but you just don't go, you just don't push yourself because you don't believe that you will succeed. And you can notice and spot this in the climbing and just transfer to your all the areas of life, which can bring you a lot of easiness.
Sure. And just to cap it off, Mina, last question, what does the future have in store for you and your career and even life outside of climbing?
I definitely looking forward to climb more outside. and I'm definitely looking forward to do more workshops and lectures all around the world to share ARMA knowledge that I accumulated during these years from all aspects, during the training aspects, psychological aspects, competition advices. So I believe that I really have a huge base of knowledges that I would love to share with the people around to help them to bring their climbing to the higher level.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning into the Sportages Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.